All right then, calling all explorers, it's time to travel around the universe and uncover those strange secrets in a brand new episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name is Dan. Welcome along. Thank you so much for listening, for following and streaming us this week in the only show that lets you explore the universe. We'll hear from a winner of a competition who designed a football kit to play a match in space with.
I knew that in space, it's really cold. So I made sure, like, you'd have to have some sort of thermal protection considering it's, like, absolutely freezing up there. And then I also designed a sweat collector, because I figured that it would be harder to actually access water on space. So if you have a sweat collector and it collects your sweat as you play, then you could turn that sweat by like separating certain particles needed to make water and then recycle it and use it.
Also, our microbe friends Benny and Mal are here for more demanding dilemmas, big questions that we don't know the answer to. This week, it's on human enhancements. So what's that?
Science has enabled everyone to enhance their bodies, strengthening their bodies with titanium maybe, or improve their intelligence with drugs. Anything that makes them able to do things that humans can't normally do. They'll be able to run faster, think faster, and maybe live longer too.
What's wrong with that? Wouldn't we all like to be beautiful bionic brain boxes if we could?
It's not that simple, is it? Who gets to have all these treatments? If some people have them and others don't, it's not very fair, is it?
Well, life isn't fair, Benny.
And our Dangerous Dan this week is a beast under the ocean who can punch faster than anything you've seen before. It's coming up in our brand new Fun Kids Science Weekly. To start, we'll head over to Russia. The other day, some firefighters had to take on a daring act of animal rescue. An owl, who was injured, was found being pecked to death by crows. How disgusting is that? But the firefighters came out and they drove off the crows. They put the owl in a box, they fed it, they kept it warm, and they've nursed it back to full health. So they've got themselves a little pet at the fire station over there. Also, the UK's polar ship, the RRS Sir David Attenborough, has come face to face with the world's biggest iceberg. The berg is called the A23A, very catchy, and it covers 1,500 square miles. It's twice the size of Greater London, which is the biggest city in the UK. Now, it broke free from the Antarctic coast over 30 years ago in 1986, and it's spent much of the time since stuck to the sea floor, but it's moved since there. The big bergs, they melt, they release mineral dust from their ice all around the seawater there, which is a brilliant source of nutrients to the organisms. It's kind of in the start of their food chain, really. And the RRS Sir David Attenborough ship took a look at everything. So this is bad and good. It's bad that this massive iceberg is melting and floating all around the ocean. That rises sea levels. But it's good that this iceberg helps the ecosystem around it. And finally this week, a school in Sheffield in the UK has been planting trees to prevent pollution. The school is right next to a main road. There aren't many trees there to suck up car fumes. Lowfield Primary School has been planting trees to take away some of the poisonous gas which caused the pollution in the area. The idea is that with less bad gas, people can breathe cleaner air and they can be healthier. Imagine when you're at school and you're right next to a main road and it's pumping out this awful, poisonous, stinking gas. Everything's polluted. Well, it's a brilliant idea from this school, right? To plant trees to help everyone breathe around them. I love that Lowfield Primary School is doing something about that issue. Let's check in with Techno Mum then. Techno Mum is one of our favourite geniuses that we talk to because she knows everything about tech, about gadgets and engineering and how it works, why it is, where it is, who makes it and how we use it every day. This week it's perfect for the winter. We're learning how to heat our home and how to stop the heat escaping.
Techno Mum Fast Files.
In the olden days, houses were heated by a fire in the hearth. Nice to look at, but not very efficient. These days, there are stacks of ways to get heat into houses, like hot air blowers, gas fires and radiators. Combi boilers not only keep radiators warm, but also heat the water for your bath. Some modern houses have heating under the floors, so no bulky radiators, and heat can move around a lot more easily. But however your home is heated, stopping heat from escaping is important. The more heat you lose through the roof, walls, doors and windows, the more heat you need to put into your home to keep it warm. And that uses more fuel, which not only wastes money, but also potentially damages the environment. And that's where insulation comes in. Really well insulated homes need hardly any heating at all to keep them warm. So they have really low energy bills. Things like double glazing and lagging the loft can help, but there's loads of other ways you can help as well. Shutting doors and closing your curtains are two ways to help keep the heat in. Can you think of any other ways?
Technomum, with the Institution of Engineering and Technology, advancing and sharing knowledge.
My favourite part of this week's show, where we explore the world, is when we explore answers to questions, where you send me them as voice notes over on the Free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. That's my favourite way that you can get in touch, so I can hear who you are and I can give you a shout out. There is another way, by leaving them as a message to me, like an email over on the website. That is what Henry has done, who is in the Wirral, who wants to know, why do people cry? Well, there are many ideas and reasons why we cry. Experts think that it might be to do with evolution. It's a sign to others that we are in trouble and we need help. It makes people feel empathetic, which means they want to care about you. When you see someone cry, what happens to you? You feel a bit sad for them, right? You feel sorry. You want to make sure they feel better. Well, that's what crying does. And it's grown to be like that through hundreds of thousands of years of humans growing and developing as species. Also, researchers found that crying releases endorphins, chemicals which can make you feel better and reduce your pain. It's almost a signal to your brain. By the way, brain, I'm feeling bad. I'm going to cry. Make sure you release those endorphins. Also, crying releases antibodies and proteins which clean your eyes. They clean you up. They help fight infections. So that is just some of the reasons why people cry, Henry. Thank you for that. This one is from Anthony, who is 8 years old, who wants to know, why does copper wire glow when it gets hot? Anthony, this is fascinating, and it's actually quite simple. When you put electricity through a copper wire, or when you heat it up, you're moving energy and electrons in the wire. The energy is passing along, and that excites the electrons that are in it. They move about, and they give off a visible light because there's so much energy that it needs to get out. If you think of a traffic jam, and wait, right at the back, one car bumps into the car in front, which bumps into the car in front of that, and it keeps going along like dominoes, keep bumping in. That's what's happening really with the electrons in the copper wire, how they're moving forward, and it creates that energy which makes them glow because of the heat energy. It's all to do with something called black body radiation. And all things that are a bit hot give off light because they can absorb radiation around them, really. But normally it's too faint for us to see it. Only when it gets really hot, like the copper wire might do, when electricity is running through it, does that light become strong enough for us to see. So thank you very much for the question, Anthony. If there is something you want answered next week on the show, please do leave it as a voice note for me. You could do that on the Free Fun Kids app. Really easy. Just open it up, click the big record button, let me know what you're thinking. You can also do it by finding the Science Weekly page over at funkidslive.com. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, do you remember? A little while ago, we chatted about a future where perhaps you can play football on the moon. There was a competition set up by the Institute for Engineering and Technology. They asked you to design a football shirt that could be worn by Moon United for a match out of space. Well, Erim Ali won her age range and joins us now. Erim, thank you so much. This is really exciting.
No problem. Hi.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us. So just tell us, how did you know about this fantastic competition?
Well, my dad, he's an engineer, so he's like a member of the IET. So he kind of found out and he like kind of showed it to me. He was like, oh, look at this. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, this seems really cool.
Wow. Well, tell us, before we get into the football shirt, being around your dad, who is an engineer, how inspiring is that to you to do engineering, but now and when you're older?
I mean, it is really inspiring. I think currently I want to be either an engineer or an astronaut. So I want to go down some sort of STEM route, and mainly because of my dad. I think he's one of my inspirations for it.
Amazing. Well, and I'm loving that already that's inspiring you now with the choices that you've made for Moon United. So you've designed a football strip. Tell us, when you first heard about the competition, what were the initial ideas that you had about what you wanted this football shirt to be?
I just thought I want it to be really cool, something that people would genuinely want to wear. And in a way, it could inspire anyone to play it, like not just be for one certain type of person. I think it's just be for like anyone in a way.
It's not any old football shirt, though, is it? This is a football shirt that you could wear to play football on space with. What ideas did you have about how space might affect what the game would be, how our bodies would react? How did you try and blend all that into your shirt?
I knew that in space, it's really cold. So I made sure, like, you'd have to have some sort of thermal protection considering it's, like, absolutely freezing up there. And then I also designed a sweat collector, because I figured that it would be harder to actually access water on space. So if you have a sweat collector and it collects your sweat as you play, then you could turn that sweat by like separating certain particles needed to make water and then recycle it and use it.
Wow. What a fantastic idea. I don't know how much we sweat, but certainly it's a brilliant plan to try and get the amount of sweat that we do. You say that you designed it. How thoroughly did you design this for the shirt?
I also designed the suit itself. So I had a lot of extra things. Like I designed what type of boots you'd have to wear, what type of like extra things. So it was very thorough.
Well, tell us about the boots. What are the boots like for playing football on the moon?
I thought because people are probably going to go floating everywhere if they're playing football. So I thought some sort of like electromagnetic kind of boot where it almost connects with the ground in a way. So you wouldn't go floating away, but you can still play football on some sort of steady ground.
It says here, well, I've seen a picture of it, but I really love the description, that your kit had geometric molecule-inspired shapes in a muted dragonfly colour palette, like something from New York Fashion Week. Tell us why a muted dragonfly colour palette, Erin.
The colours look really nice together, and I thought, it's still a football kit. It needs to look decent, because, you know, football's a big thing. And then I said, like, kind of a diverse colour palette in a way where it wasn't targeted at a certain type of audience or like people that want to play it, if that makes sense.
No, of course. And I know that your kit was unisex, which makes perfect sense as we move through 2023. When you made your kit, how much did it get you thinking about the other things that you might have to design in order to play football on the moon? Like, do you think the ball would need to change? Would the goal nets need to change? What would we do about breathing? How much did you think about that, Erin?
Quite a lot, because the ball would also float away if you're in space. So I kind of thought where you're going to play as well. You could obviously do like some sort of dome thing where there's still gravity and things like that. But I think I was really concerned. I was like, okay, so I've made the kit, but realistically, if we're going to play, how would we do it? Because it's a lot harder than just putting on a kit and just playing like football. You need to design this whole massive thing behind it.
And having made this and having won, what have you learned while designing it? I mean, it's brilliant to know a lot going in, but what have you taken out of this fantastic competition process?
I realized, I was like, science and pretty much everything that you wouldn't expect to go in science actually go hand in hand. Like sport and science, normally you wouldn't think, oh, like how would that even go together? But then after that day, I was a bit like, oh wait, that makes sense now. So it was a bit like you could realize the connections between two complete different things.
And how did it feel when you found out you won and you got to try on your strip that you had designed with like one of our lionesses, Beth England?
It was honestly amazing. It was just crazy. Like, You wouldn't expect that to happen, I didn't even think I'd win. So getting to try it on with a lioness was just insane.
Well, I'm so happy that you've taken part and that you've learned so much, and the kit looks stunning. So Erin Ali, full congratulations and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, explorers, this week for our Dangerous Dan, we need to take a deep breath to search out some of the most weird, mean, strange and deadly things around. We are heading deep into tropical waters all around the world to take a look at a beast that packs quite an incredible punch. The mantis shrimp is not a proper shrimp at all. It's a crustacean, and it's a beautiful one. It's got incredible bright colours, reds, blues, whites, pinks, greens, all blending together to help it disguise itself along the seabed. It's got 8 pairs of legs with eyes on stalks that pop out of the top of its head, and they're known for their punch. They are very aggressive with it too. The mantis shrimp can move and punch very quickly. If they want prey or if they're being attacked, they fling their strange claws forward as quickly as a gunshot. Over 50 miles an hour, they smash through with a force of over 1,500 newtons. It's strong enough to crash through the shells of crabs and clams. Also, their punch is so powerful and fast, it can heat up the water right around it to 4,400 degrees, which is almost as hot as the sun. That's how much energy is in there. They're thought to have the most complex eyes in the animal kingdom too. Check this out, they can see light that no other animal can. They've got 16 photoreceptors in their eyes to pick up colour. Us humans, we've got 3. They've got 4 times the amount of colour-seeing potential that we do. It means they know what's going on around them, spotting the smallest changes as colour and light moves. And they're even older than dinosaurs. Evidence has been found of them from 400 million years ago. And this is amazing. Sometimes when they're really stressed, their powerful punch is strong enough to break through the glass that holds them in aquariums. They can punch their way to freedom. And that is why this mantis shrimp that isn't a mantis and it isn't a shrimp goes straight onto our Dangerous Dan list. Before we finish off this week, let's explore some demanding dilemmas with microbes Benny and Mal. Usually they live inside your gut, right? But recently they've been taking us through ethical dilemmas. It's really difficult choices about what to do and the right thing to do. This time it's all about human enhancement.
Benny and Mal's demanding dilemmas with support from Nuffield Council on Bioethics.
All right, Benny and Mal here.
Yeah.
We're teasing out a few demanding dilemmas for you. Big word, isn't it? Dilemma. It just means having a difficult choice to make.
You choose, like whether to have a lovely crunchy apple or a delicious banana.
Good example, Mal. And you might not know this, but an ethical dilemma is a difficult choice about the right thing to do.
You choose. To give you an idea of an ethical dilemma, imagine if there was only one banana left and your little sister wanted it too. Who gets it? You or her?
And here's where it gets really interesting. Some ethical dilemmas are about difficult choices we have to make about how we use science.
You choose. Dilemmas about science? Not sure I get what you mean there.
Science is all around us. It helps us do a massive amount of stuff. But just because we can do some things, well, doesn't mean we should.
Yeah, just because you could take the banana doesn't mean you should. Imagine your poor little sister. Ah, I wanted the banana!
All right, calm down, mate.
You too.
Hang on a minute.
Files deleted.
Great. That's the end of that sound effect now, Mal. Right, let's talk about human enhancements. And to do that, let's just pop into the 22nd century for a moment. Yikes! It's an army of robots. Or are they people?
They're genetically superior, intelligent people with titanium-reinforced bodies.
They're pretty good-looking too, aren't they?
Yeah, every single one of them is gorgeous. Are you sure we are on Earth?
Well, it's one version of Earth where science has enabled everyone to enhance their bodies. Strengthening their bodies with titanium, maybe. Or improve their intelligence with drugs. Anything that makes them able to do things that humans can't normally do. They'll be able to run faster, think faster, and maybe live longer too.
What's wrong with that? Wouldn't we all like to be beautiful bionic brain boxes if we could?
It's not that simple, is it? Who gets to have all these treatments? If some people have them and others don't, it's not very fair, is it?
Well, life isn't fair, Benny.
Cynical? Think of it this way. In sports, athletes aren't allowed to use drugs to enhance their performance. There are loads of tests to check that no one has an advantage like that. It's considered to be cheating. Also, all these enhancements aren't likely to be cheap, so does that mean only rich people get to have them?
I see what you mean, but if I had the money, why shouldn't I be able to go and buy myself some super speedy legs or brain turbo tablets? I'm not doing anyone else any harm.
In a way, you have a point. Maybe people should be allowed to do what they want if the treatments are available, but imagine
If some human enhancements could be done in a baby's tiny cells and genes before it's even born, these might be changing the DNA inside the cells to give the baby more resistance to certain diseases, stronger characteristics, and even decide what colour eyes the child will have. And whilst you have a choice, a baby doesn't. Is that right?
Tricky one, Matt. But are they going to care if, as a result, they're better looking, healthier and stronger than they would have been?
Perhaps not, but also, it's very hard to say whether these changes would be such an advantage as people age. There isn't enough research. Maybe the changes could even risk people's health in ways that we don't even know about yet.
Well, you're putting me off now. I think I'd want to know the risks before deciding what to have.
Very sensible. So, as you can see, it's a right old dilemma.
A demanding dilemma. A positive, brain-busting, bioethical bamboozler. I wonder which side you'll agree with.
You choose.
Benny and Mal's Demanding Dilemmas, with support from Nuffield Council on Bioethics.
And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for listening. If you have anything sciencey that you want answered, make sure you leave it as a voice note for me on the free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. You can hear loads of our brilliant podcasts too on the free Fun Kids app, funkidslive.com. You can ask your smart speaker to play them, and you get bonus episodes by subscribing to Fun Kids Podcast Plus. And Fun Kids, we're our children's radio station. Listen to us in some cities on your DAB radio. You can get us on the free Fun Kids app. And if you've got a smart speaker, wake it up and ask it to play Fun Kids.